It's great to see you. You're very welcome. If you're a guest here, ever so welcome. I don't know whether you're somebody who's already following Jesus and wants to find out more and to worship him. This is for you. Maybe you're somebody who's actually not convinced God exists at all and you're asking questions. This is a place for you too. My name's David. I'm married to Alison, who was serving you coffee this morning, and we're the pastors here. Some of them anyway. Would you like to find Luke chapter 14? We're just finishing. This is the last in the little series we've been doing on relationships. And next week, we're going to revert back to a long-running series on Romans, which will be more of a study in the book of Romans for a few weeks. But we've just been doing the series on relationships. We started out 3 weeks ago, and we looked at, if you want to build good friendships around you, what do you look for? You look for character. And then we thought about how we approach relationships and how sometimes the false beliefs that we have affect the way that we make friends and build relationships, and how we need to seek Jesus and the truth about who we really are to be effective friend makers. And last week we looked at the power of forgiveness to heal broken relationships. And those are all on the website, and you can download the talks, the written or audio, if you want to follow them up. This week, the theme is premeditated, principled decisions. Premeditated, principled decisions. Have you ever, this is about thinking ahead and planning. Have you ever lost your car in the car park? In a multi-story? Have you ever? Anybody? Is it just me? Yeah, a few of you. Okay, so knowing that that is a possibility, yesterday Alice and I went into town and we parked the car and, nicely near the, it's quite high up, and nicely near the exit. And as we got out, it said number 5 on the wall. So we said, number 5, remember, near the exit, number 5. Floor 5. So we went off to our party. We came back a couple of hours later, pressed number 5 on the lift, got out, went out the door. No car. There was a space, just would fit the car really well, but there was no car. Ah! And so we walked around and wondered whether we'd come in the wrong end. We are the wrong side of 50, and maybe we'd have forgotten. But no, we'd come in the right side. Just no car. So we thought, oh, well, maybe we just got the floor wrong. So I sent Alison up one floor, and I went down one floor. I went down and walked out of the exit, and there was my car. Wonderful. And I looked at the wall, and it said 5. Oh, that's odd. Is it one of these mezzanine floor things? So I went back out up the stairs, met Alison coming down. She said, no, it's not there. But it's really odd. The floor up there is number 5. And we thought, oh, that's strange. And we got in the car, and as we drove out, we realized that the number 5 was the speed limit. So much for planning ahead, eh? I read a great little story in the paper about a lady who, she wrote a letter to the paper, Samantha. She says, for many years I've used, and she's somebody who plans ahead, thinks ahead. For many years I've used an old carrier bag, plastic carrier bag, to protect my bicycle saddle in wet weather. I parked my bicycle outside the supermarket for 10 minutes this morning. When I returned, the bag had disappeared for the first time ever. A rethink is clearly going to be necessary. And the Rolling Stones are touring in the States at the moment, and they're planning ahead. They've been having trouble working the telly, apparently. So there's a leaked list of requirements that the Rolling Stones have issued to all the management ahead of their tour. They've got a combined age of 254. So they've demanded clear written instructions on how to switch on the television, the air conditioning, and the sound system in each hotel. It's called planning ahead, and it's very wise. Have you ever driven up to a major junction? And all of a sudden, there's a junction you weren't ready for, and the lanes are all changing, or the cones are out, and you think, where? And there's not enough time to check the sat-nav, and am I going the right way? And then you find that you're going to go to Hull, and you were meant to go into Liverpool. Not enough planning ahead. Or maybe you've gone out with friends for a meal, and you're wandering along and saying, where should we go, where should we go? And you end up in this restaurant, which is really swanky and double your normal budget for a night out, and you don't know how you're going to pay for it. Haven't thought ahead and planned ahead. How are you going to do your evening? Sometimes if we don't plan ahead, we lose our way. Or in the heat of the moment, we do things which we aren't quite prepared for. We sometimes make bad decisions. And this can really ruin good relationships, and it can spoil the chance of getting into good relationships. It can build bad relationships. And Jesus tells us in the story we're about to read all about planning ahead, that discipleship is about thinking ahead, making premeditated, principled decisions. Premeditated because you think about it beforehand when you're not caught in the flurry of emotions and time pressure and the rush of the moment. They're principled because they're doing what Jesus calls you to do, not what you feel like doing in the seductive moment. And the decisions because it's a commitment you make now for something that may happen one day. Premeditated, principled decisions. Shall we pray? Lord, I ask you to come and be with us. Thank you for your presence here. We thank you for everything you've given us. The chance to follow you and to be restored to you in our relationship, whatever background we come from. Thank you for your gifts to us. Thank you for the gifts to the church. People giving week in, week out through their standing orders and direct debits. We thank you for that, all that offering of worship in the financial form which helps us do what we do here. We thank you for your generosity to us in so many ways. And I pray that you'll speak to us this morning through this passage and challenge us and call us to account. Amen. I suspect that what I'm going to be talking about might be, some of you might think it's a bit old hat and be sort of fading out and checking your Facebook status. That's fine if that's what you want to do. But I would encourage you to be open for God to speak to everybody today, each one of you, and challenge you about your decision-making, your premeditated principle decisions. Do you mind if I call them PPDs for short? Let's read Luke 14. Luke's one of the four Gospels. If you open the Bible, the right-hand side is a bit smaller, and at the beginning of that are the four Gospels. They're the four biographies about Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're looking at Luke, the third one, chapter 14, and we're starting at verse 25. So he's a bit of a celebrity by now, Jesus, and it says large crowds, verse 25, chapter 14, large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, it's not what you expect, but he says, if anyone comes to me, so he's walking up the hill, wandering along by the Lake of Galilee, whatever, thousands of people following him, success. And he turns around and he says, do you want to follow me? He says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life. So we've got these people following Jesus up the hill or wherever he's going surfing or something, and thousands of them following him. And he says, if anyone comes to me, he turns around, anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. It sounds really harsh, this first thing. He's got all these people following him. But he's using a Jewish rhetoric. Jesus was a rabbi. He was a Jewish teacher. And he uses a form of rhetoric, which is the comparison and contrast thing. You see it a lot in the Psalms and in Proverbs. Proverbs 10 verse 1, for example, says, a wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son grief to his mother. It's one of those comparison things. And so he's really setting up a relative thing. He's saying, love me or love your family. He's putting up a who's comes first thing. And actually, when they use the word hate, it's often not so much hate, but love me more or love them less. It's a comparative thing. Sounds really harsh in our language, and the impact is harsh, but the core meaning isn't. Whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Now, that wasn't a figure of speech. Okay, we use it as a figure of speech, carry your cross. But it wasn't for them. They saw people carrying their crosses every day. They knew what that meant. That was torture and murder. So this was a shocking challenge to them, to the people listening to this one. And then he goes on to illustrate the cost of following Jesus. And he says, verse 28, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. At the time, there was a big building project going on that they all would have known about. It was, King Herod was rebuilding the temple. They didn't like King Herod very much, and it was a sort of bit of a monument to him. So he was sort of saying, if you want to build something big, count what it costs first. Make a PPD, premeditated principle decision. Or, verse 31, suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able, with 10,000 men, to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms for peace. And again, that's a reality. He was talking to people who were living in an occupied territory. And all the time they were mumbling and grumbling amongst themselves and about uprisings and kicking the Romans out. But they knew that there was no way they could outnumber them or outwit them. Making a PPD, think ahead, he says. And he finishes by going back to his original theme when he says, in the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. See, on the face of it, Jesus was having great success. Large crowds were following with him, and no wonder he had preached with wisdom and humor. He had cast out demons, he'd healed and fed people. It was really nice to people. What's not to like? If it had been the X Factor popular vote, he'd have won. No question. And then he turns to them and he delivers an austerity speech. Stop following me, he says, unless you're willing to make me more important than your friends and your family, more important than yourself, more important than all your material possessions and your bank balance and what you think is important. It's about priority in relationships. Jesus is saying something about that order of relationships. Him and me. Him and my friends. Him and what I have, my stuff. What's going on when Jesus does this? He's telling us about the cost. That's what's going on. And this change of tone from Jesus at this point with all these people is very significant. You need to listen to the change in tone. He's redefining relationship with him at this point. And he's saying, we are no longer spectators, we're recruits. We're no longer watching from the sidelines. We're in the field of play, he says. And this is what it's going to be like, and you need to think about this. How do you measure the cost of being on the field of play? How do you measure the cost? I think one way of measuring the cost is by making premeditated principle decisions, because in the process of thinking it through, you realize this is what it's going to cost me. Let's think of it a different way. Think of it as walking along a cliff edge. Okay, think of relationships as walking along a cliff edge. There are places where you end up really close to the edge. And for some of you, there'll be certain areas where you get closer than other areas. Your weak spots, if you like. And the cost of following Jesus is measured by the steps you will take to step away from the edge. Step back from the edge. Costly decisions to make about relationships when first and foremost, you're a follower of Jesus. Let's think through some of those things. How about sex? If you're not yet married and you're in the process of thinking about or trying to or wanting to grow in intimacy with another person, this is going to become an issue. And you need to decide beforehand. When I was a teenager, Alice and I were in the same youth group not far from here, and every year we had the talk titled How Far Can You Go? Got the best turnout in that talk. It never got any better, though. The message was always the same. But you need to decide that before, because in the heat of passion, what happens? You make a decision to keep sex to marriage, not beforehand, and you take steps to make sure that doesn't become a weak point for you. Or if you are married, you commit yourself to staying faithful. How do you do that? You make decisions to ensure that you don't get sucked into the wrong things. So Alice and I have an agreement that we will not compare each other with anybody else of the same sex as the person I'm comparing with. We won't allow a deep relationship to grow with somebody of the opposite sex who is attractive to us. We're transparent with our diary and our phone and our emails. We know each other's passwords. Or think about pornography. Pornography is wrong and destroys relationships. You might think it doesn't because it's a solo thing, but it does. It destroys relationships on the other side of the screen, and it destroys your relationships when you try and build a relationship where someone of the opposite sex is involved. So what will you do about it? What decision will you make to prevent that becoming a relationship destroyer? How will you block your computer? If you're weak in this area, if you walk close to the edge in this area, maybe you'll get somebody with whom you can be accountable, who can take you on one side and can say, how are you doing? Where is the edge of the cleft for you in all this? Step well back. Let's think about booze or substances which you use to change how you feel. Chocolate, drugs, whatever. I'll talk about booze just as a sort of euphemism for the rest. When I get off my head, I might say things I shouldn't and do things I regret. And the inevitable consequence, my relationships suffer. Do I use booze as a way of oiling the wheels of difficult conversations? I read a fascinating book last year about a woman in Australia, a journalist who used to report on alcoholism and stuff, and called, can't remember what it's called now, but she was fascinated. She said she went dry to try and find out what it was like living without alcohol. And she said the thing that was most difficult was intimacy, sexual intimacy and close conversation. She felt she couldn't negotiate difficult things and things like sex without alcohol. Doing it sober was too difficult. So how are you going to, what sort of controls or what sort of decisions are you going to make about when you drink? How much do you drink? Do you drink at all? Do you take a month off once a year? How do you do it? How do you plan your social life? How do you plan your financial budget that monitors what the decision you make now about what might happen in the future? You want to be able to talk and deal with difficult things while sober. You want to be safe and sound in your relationships with no regrets. So where is the edge of the cliff for you? Step well back. Another one is money. Money is probably the cause, the main cause of breakups in relationships, both in business and in marriage and close relationships. Because people have different ways of handling money, and the stress of too much money or not enough money can cause real difficulty. It's a bit like sex in that if you get into a relationship with somebody, whether you're working with them or whether you're living with them, you marry them or whatever, there will come a point when your biblical values of handling money or handling sex could clash. Decide beforehand where you're going. Decide beforehand what Jesus has told you. So archetypally, we were talking with somebody last week who was saying how when they got married, they hadn't checked out the other person's attitude to money, or at least they sort of noted it, but they didn't affect their decision. And they ended up with somebody who wasn't generous. So whereas this person tithed and gave generously, tithed to church, gave generously to charities, was, you know, tipped extravagantly, the other person wouldn't, resented it. That's a real problem in a relationship. Or if somebody likes to hoard their money as opposed to save it and spend it wisely. So sort out where you are on those things before you go into relationships. Make a premeditated principal decision. How do you handle debt? Credit cards, store cards, what sort of mortgage? When it comes to money, where is the edge of the cliff for you? Step well back. Let's think about work for a minute. Relationships at work are possibly the area where you have the most relationships. And by work, I don't mean just paid work. I mean voluntary work or study or what you go out to do. There's four types of relationship, really. There's the relationship with your peers. How are you going to look after those relationships in a way that reflects the fact that you're a disciple of Jesus? You speak well of each other. You'll not get involved in gossip. In fact, if you hear gossip turn up, you make a decision, I'm going to walk away from that conversation. You serve each other. Think it through. Another relationship, obviously, is with your boss, or if you're the boss, with your subordinates. Colossians 6, Paul writes, is a really good indicator here. If you're when you're working for somebody, work for them as though you're working for the Lord, he says. So before you get to the decision where you've got a really grumpy boss who gives you a hard time, decide how you're going to serve him as though you're serving the Lord or her. And if you're the boss, how are you going to serve, how are you going to look after the people who work for you? He says in Colossians 6, he says, look after them like your master looks after you. Make a decision about that before you get into the position where you're employing people. Maybe you've got customers or suppliers or pupils or patients. What are the discipleship positions you're going to take well in advance of the point of being put under stress? You'll be honest. You'll say what you do. You'll be people of integrity who do what you say. I think another area is leaving and arriving. Leaving work and leaving an employment and arriving in a new employment or a job is really, really important. Ian's not here today, but Ian Downing spoke a year or so ago about when he was being made redundant, how he felt compelled to leave well. And so before he left, even though it wasn't a great situation, in his department, he left a little thank you note and a present on everybody's desk. He wanted to leave really well. Because if you leave well, you arrive well. It's a Christ-like way of maintaining relationships in work. There are lots of things to think about in your working life. Many of you are working or studying or whatever at the moment. Where do you find yourself compromising? Behaving differently to the way that you would do if you were talking about it here today, you know, when you're being a Christian. In what ways do you not work well in relationships with people? Criticizing, not keeping your promises in business. Think about it. Where is the edge of the cliff for you? Step well back. Another area is one of handling conflict. This affects lots of relationships, of course. What happens when you fall out with people? A conflict can emerge in a relationship really quickly and over nothing very much. Remember, Pauline was stood here, was it last week, and she talked about how there was a massive breakdown in her family, in her close family, over, I think it was a dishwasher. When you end up finding that you're diving into conflict, conflict in itself is not a bad thing, it's how you handle it. When you find yourself diving into conflict, how are you going to handle it? You've got to decide this before you get there, because in the middle of conflict, you cannot think straight. It's like sex. Never thought of that before. You can't think straight when you're in the middle of it. Okay, let's get back onto conflict. We have a value statement in the church. If you go onto our website and put in values, we've got a lot of values, and here's one of them, collegiate relationships. We are honored by every person whom God adds to the vineyard. Together we will build the church with mutual respect, open communication, determined cooperation, and believing and speaking the best about each other. That's a PPD, I suppose, because we're making that decision about how we're going to behave. But you could take those principles and you could put them into your secular life equally. When someone insults you next time, or cuts you up in traffic, or gets that job that you were going for, or you takes offense at something you said, or you take offense at something they said, how are you going to react? And it's really a pride issue, this is. it sort of build, conflict puffs us up and makes our pride the sort of dominant driver of what we do. How are you going to deal with it? In humility, it's what God thinks that matters, not other people. So always think the best about each, other people. Always give others the benefit of the doubt. Count to 10 before you react to insults. Decide to forgive first and ask questions later. Where's the edge of the cliff for you when you're in conflict? Step well back. Just a quick comment on the last thing is on social media. I'm still working out my thinking on this, and I think it's less of a relationship issue at the moment anyway. It's more about a communication with friends issue. But it's an increasingly dominant way of relating with people, so I'd encourage you to think ahead about how you do that as a follower of Jesus. How you post, how you acknowledge, how what you like and don't like, all that stuff. I don't really understand it, but I think it's significant in this. Wherever the edge of the cliff is, step well back. Let me summarize. Where do you get close to the edge? Wherever that is, make active plans to step back from it. Look at that Luke 14 a bit. All the people are following Jesus, and they're in the crowd behind him, and he's great, and it's a celebrity, and it's so exciting, and you know, we're going to sense the presence of God today. Are we going to see somebody prayed for and healed? Are we going to hear some wonderful truth? And where are you? Are you in that crowd? Are you in that crowd? And are you enjoying having a little bit of God on a Sunday, you know, a taste of eternity, whilst on Monday you're sticking with your easy relationships, with your own plans and priorities, and treating everything that you own as yours? And when this hard word comes from Jesus, and he says, choose, what are you choosing? Because making these premeditated principle decisions about factors in your relationship will illustrate the cost of following Jesus and putting him first. Jesus turns in his tracks and he says, do you really want to follow me? This is not a roundabout, it's a roller coaster. Look ahead, the journey may be arduous, it may be long, it may be risky. Don't come along if you want an easy life. Following me is a radical call, he says, and it will change your relationships with your friends and family, your relationship with your own ego and your own ambitions and what you want out of your life. It'll change your relationship with what you have, your stuff. Look ahead. Get ready. If you really want to follow Jesus and be his disciples, you need to make some decisions. I think Jesus says, and I think he's saying it to you today, he's saying you've got some luggage with you. And he says, this journey we're going on, this is not a nice, smooth, along the beach journey. This is over these mountains. You can't take that luggage with you. You won't be able to get it over the mountains. You're going to have to leave it, and you can't come back for it. What's in the luggage? Sexual compromise? Escape into booze and drugs and whatever? Greed and money? Ambition at work? Pride in conflict. What's in your luggage that you're thinking, I want to keep this. I don't want to drop this. And Jesus is saying, if you want to come with me, you just won't be able to make it unless you leave that luggage behind. Let me conclude. Relationships are a wonderful gift to us from God. God is in relationship. We looked at that at the beginning of the series. And when he created man and woman, he created relationship. He created them. It says it's plural. We're created to be in relationships and have the joy of friends and doing life together. And from the beginning, the enemy has tried to destroy it. Primarily by tempting you to put everything else in front of Jesus. That's why relationships don't work as well as they should. So we want to choose to put Jesus first in our lives, and we make a premeditated, principled decision about those things which are a threat to following him And then we can enjoy truly abundant, relationship-filled lives, the ones that he promises on this roller coaster ride. So let us choose Jesus first, shall we? And put him first, and may we have the best possible relationships around us. Yeah? Yeah? We'd like to stand. Let's pray. Lord Jesus, we want to put you first. Well, I'm not sure everybody here does. Don't pray this unless you do. Okay, pray with me if you do. I want to put you first. I know this is going to be a roller coaster ride, and I can't take everything with me. I need to make some decisions and leave behind some things which I thought I could take. I know I need to step back from the cliff edge. But I choose to put you first. As I was speaking, I think some of you are thinking, you are immediately convicted about something that you know you need to leave behind. It's time to make that decision now. And I just want to pray and ask him to reveal it to you. For those, some of you who maybe haven't heard that yet, right now, that you will understand what it is that he's saying, hey, I want you to follow me, but you need to deal with this. It's just, you can't walk over these mountains carrying that on your back. So Lord Jesus, I ask you to reveal, speak to each person here. Call them to follow you. And show them what it is about which they need to make a decision. I'm going to ask you to be brave. If that's you, if you want to put something down today and walk on without that bit of luggage, I'm going to invite you to come to the front so we can pray for you. I'm going to invite you to step outside of the pew, walk down the aisle and come and stand at the front. I know it's a big thing in front of all these people, but it's a statement of, I'm serious about this, God. I'm going to follow you. And I'm going to make these difficult decisions to do that. So if that's you, would you like to come down now and we'll pray for you? Anybody else? Something's going to change in the lives of these people today. They're going to move from spectator to participant, from observer to player. The Lord loves it when that happens. And they're going to be anointed with his presence and his power. If you're a leader of one of the small groups in the church, would you come and pick on one of these guys and just pray for them? Come and bless them. Don't preach at them. Don't quote stuff at them. Just bless them. They could tell you what it's about if they like, and you can help them pray through the decision to make, put the luggage down. Whilst they're doing that, the rest of you, if you've come this morning and you'd like us to pray for you about something, you've got a physical healing you need, or mental healing, or financial issue, or something that you need prayer for today, we'd love to pray for you. So just come to the front and grab me, or look around for somebody who looks like a Christian, and I would love to pray with you. If you're a regular here and you're not used to praying for people, would you come and just join in? Just just attach yourself to one of these and watch what they do and join in and learn how to pray for people, okay? If you've got kids, please go and get them. We're going to carry on praying for a while, so do come back if you'd like us to pray with you. But if you have children, we'd love you to go and fetch them now. Thank you for coming to the Vineyard today. Have a great week.